It is 9:29 and some change. You're listening to Coast Community Radio, KMUN 91.9 FM, Astoria, Oregon, KTCB 89.5 FM, Tillamook, Oregon. We're streaming at coastradio.org, and we're on your mobile device using the TuneIn app. Important announcement, heads up. The Astoria Warming Center plans to be open this week on Monday, that's tonight, Tuesday, Wednesday nights, from 7 in the evening through 8 the following morning. The center will be open on these nights if they find enough volunteers. Existing volunteers, please contact the center ASAP, and people who want to become new volunteers should email astoriawarmingcenter@gmail.com. Well, it is officially 9:30 now, and in honor of that moment, it's time for Food Talk. I'm Marianne Myers, and I'm here with my ever-fabulous co-host, Linda Perkins. Good morning.
Good morning. I got my apron on.
You do.
I remembered.
You do. A turtleneck and an apron. It's cold out there.
Yes, I know. Oh, I think it's officially winter, though it's not officially winter.
Yeah, I know. Well, what is a calendar now, yeah. Really? Oh, my gosh. We've cruised through, I don't know if we cruised, but we're past Thanksgiving.
How was your Thanksgiving?
My Thanksgiving was fabulous. How about yours?
You know, it was good. We went out to eat, and we had a friend with us, so it was sort of a family and a friendsgiving, and so we had to pretend that we conversed and that we didn't just sit around and stare.
How'd that go?
It went pretty okay, except the stepson was talking about surfing at one point, and then he made some grand sweeping gesture and knocked an entire glass of water on the guest, and she it didn't just like graze her or splash by her, you know, it hit her full on in the chest and then just like laid in her lap long enough to soak in. It didn't even roll off. It was so sad. And then the stepson says, "Well, that was the wave," because he was talking about surfing. But otherwise, it went well. It was fun. I always really liked that holiday.
Yeah, I do too. And Tom and I went to dinner with friends, where you have gone in the past.
We missed
you. But it's always fun to go with a big group of friends and have everybody bring something delicious. Which, by the way, you want to hear about a fail? Mine.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I decided at the last minute that I was going to make a pumpkin pie because Linda Perkins was not going to be at dinner, and so there was no pie. And there was lots of dessert.
Okay.
Oh, my gosh. Really good rice pudding. Really good, which it turns out is a Christmas or a Thanksgiving or a holiday tradition in Costa Rica.
Really?
Is rice pudding. And, oh, man, I just really like rice
pudding. See, Joyce Senior can cook.
Yes.
Because I remember the year before, she brought some plantain dish.
Yes.
And whoever thought of plantains for Thanksgiving, but they are perfect.
They're so good.
Yeah.
Oh, I had some last night.
She can cook.
Yes, that girl can cook. So anyway, rice pudding, and then our hostess made beautiful little delicious little tiny pecan tartlets. There was a ton of
so much work
desserts, and we didn't need that pumpkin pie, but I doggedly made a pumpkin pie, and I got the filling done at home, and then I realized that I didn't have what I needed for pie pastry. I had neither butter nor shortening.
Oh, wow.
I know. So,
how do you have a food talk show on the radio? No, I'm just kidding.
I know.
That was mean, and I didn't mean it to be mean. I'm sorry.
Did.
No, I didn't. I'm sorry.
No, it was one of those. I don't like to go grocery shopping. I don't like to go shopping.
Totally understand
that. So I put it off as long as possible, and I put it off a little too long, and I didn't have what I needed. And I was committed because I had this filling. Mm-hmm. So I had some almond biscotti, and I thought, you know what? I'm going to just make a cookie crumb crust. And
it sounds good.
How bad could that be, right? And it was just awful.
No. I'm so sorry.
It was horrible.
It sounds like it would be good.
Well, don't fall for it. It was not good. It was not good. Anyway, but it was the only not good thing at dinner, I got to say. So that was good. That was excellent. So the next big feast day is around, no matter what you celebrate in December, usually there's a big meal involved. Mm-hmm. Do you do another big family thing?
Yeah, usually I do a standing rib roast for Christmas.
Nice. Nice. Usually I have a pajama day.
Oh, yeah? Oh, that's really nice.
Yeah.
Oh, I got new pajamas.
You did?
Oh, yeah. And so I had them on this morning. That's the first time that Dale saw them. So they're a onesie. They're
Nice.
Yes, they're a giant onesie, and they're red and white striped. And he came in the kitchen, and he was actually like a cartoon, like shocked and taken aback. Like he did like the little jump back, but it wasn't like fake. It was real. He was just like this little cartoon. He hadn't had coffee yet, and his glasses weren't on, and he just didn't know what was going on. And he said, I'll give you $200 cash if you wear those down to the radio station today. And I said, okay. And then his face totally changed. And he said, I mean, I'll give you $200 cash if you don't wear that down to the radio station today.
Have you collected?
Yep. Drinks are on me.
I'm telling you, I normally say to you, what have you been cooking? But I know what you've been cooking. Yeah. So tell us, just go ahead and tell us.
This Saturday is the Clatsop Animal Assistance Bake Sale. And that is what I've been doing for all year, just baking, but this is the crazy time. Just the cutout cookies. I've made 44 batches of dough and rolled them out. I told Marianne I roll them out in my stove because it's the only place that doesn't have something on it in my kitchen. But you know, it's a nice smooth glass surface. I have a glass cooktop. And then when I roll my dough between plastic, because I just do a giant rolling session, and then that keeps it from not drying out, and it makes it much easier to roll.
Much easier.
Yeah. And then that glass surface of the cooktop, the plastic sticks to it, so you don't have to get the countertop wet and then put the plastic down. You just put the plastic down, put the dough on top, put another piece of plastic on top, and then just roll away.
Yeah. So how many cookies is a batch?
You know, it totally depends on the cookie, and I don't even know, because what I do is I roll and I roll and I roll until I put them on those, you know, those flexible thin plastic cutting boards.
You
can
like
bend them and
cutting mats. Yeah,
exactly. So I'll just roll out five things of dough, and then I put them on a mat and put them in the fridge. Five more, put it on top of that. Five more, put it on top of that. Five more, put it on top of that. And I do that until it touches the bottom of the next shelf, and then I cut them out. And so it's not like, ooh, I got 17 cookies out of that batch. It's like, look at that. Now I'm up to 1,000. That's what it is. Oh my gosh. But yeah, that's what I've been doing. And then baking, you know, a lot of cakes, a lot of quick breads, but and there's a lot of other people that bake too. But just yesterday I was talking to, maybe the day before, Christine Trexel. Uh-huh. So she always bakes. They aren't necessarily fancy in that they're not like super decorated, but they're fancy cookies in that they're very sophisticated. Like she has these little espresso shortbread hearts she does that are deeply espresso flavored, and she dips half of it in chocolate, and she makes these coconut sables that are just so sandy and so delicious. So they are just really, really sophisticatedly flavored and just really excellent cookies. So anyway, all the people who pre-order stuff always ask for her cookies. But then this year she said, I'm going to make the sables and I'm going to make the shortbread. And there were a couple others she made. She says, but I'm bored of the others. I'm going to make something else. And I thought, that is so gutsy, because I mean, people pay us a lot of money for her cookies, and I thought, you know what, I'm bored too, because I'm always making the same thing and in such giant quantity, you know, like we sell just a ton of zucchini bread, but why don't I make something else? Because, well, and part of it is, you know, we've tested all this stuff, we know what sells, what people love. But I thought, what a brave thing to do, you know, especially when you have to make a large quantity. Just say, I'm bored with this. I'm making something else. And, you know, next year, you're all getting lasagna. No, but seriously, I was so proud of her, you know?
Yeah. Actually, lasagna works great for a bake sale. Yes, anything you bake.
I was just saying a word.
No, I think it's a great idea. Aww. We could go get dinner and dessert.
Yes.
That's great. So remind us when the sale is so that we can come see massive amounts of fabulous stuff.
You know, it's Saturday, this Saturday, at the Lovell Room, Fort George Brewery. And it is, so that's 14th and Duane in Astoria. And I think it's 9 to 4, but 9:30 to 4 for sure.
Nine to four is what it's saying in the paper.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. So that's December 9th.
Yeah.
Coming up. So we will all see you there, and you just have to trust that we're there because I've been there before when you have not been able to know. Exactly. So, and there's a whole lot going on besides the bake sale for this big celebration in support of the Animal Shelter Foundation, but the bake sale is the reason that most of us want to be there when the door is open. It's like the Black Friday of Clatsop County.
Of sugar.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's the second largest bake sale I know of in America.
Are you serious?
I am serious.
What the heck is the first?
It's this huge thing in New York City with 10 celebrity chefs, Bobby Flay, Martha Stewart, Mario Batali, seriously, 10 celebrity TV chefs, and it's in Grand Central Station in New York City, and it has just this giant space and just dozens of speed racks and so many people, and they only make twice what we do.
Holy cow.
Yep. There's other bake sales that are many other locations, like they'll be spread across the country or they'll go for several weekends, but in one location one day, this is the second largest bake sale that I know of in America.
Wow. Uh-huh. Wow.
Yeah. It is big.
It is real big. It's real big. Well, I have been baking some things for the bake sale because I have so many friends that are gluten-free. So.
Yeah, and I really appreciate that. Pretty much everybody here is at the radio station.
That's right.
So many people. But yeah, that's really cool that you do that because it's also hard to do, you know, and you do it so well.
Well, I don't want the gluten-free people not to come to the bake sale. Yeah. That's basically my plan.
We do have a lot of gluten-free zucchini bread.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, okay. And banana bread.
All right.
But you're making apple cake?
I'm also making, Fall from Grace apple cake. So that'll be good. It'll all be good. So we will collectively see all of you there on Saturday the 9th, this next.
Yeah.
Come early, I would say. Come early and shop big. It's a worthy cause. And also, it's just big fun and delicious.
Yeah.
So, I've just been making, like a leftover turkey soup.
Oh, but that's so good.
It is so good. And I was really lucky. I didn't host Thanksgiving this year, but I got the turkey carcass. Yay.
Oh,
and
yay.
All the pan drippings. So,
you know what? It's funny. Tim Kennedy, when he makes the soup, he calls it skeleton soup. And there's something about calling it skeleton soup that it just doesn't seem as delicious as if you isn't that funny?
Come through the food web the other day who called it turkey frame soup.
Frame soup? No, I've
turkey
never.
Turkey frame soup.
I've never heard that. I mean, it kind of makes sense, but no, I've never heard that.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Two new names for turkey soup.
Yes.
Neither one of them is appropriate for a menu item, but
Still,
yeah, turkey soup. It is one of those things that you go, oh, ho hum, I'm going to make soup. And then you realize how fabulously delicious it really is.
Well, and then you know how they say that we eat with our eyes, but you know what? I mean, if you name something a stupid name, people aren't going to want to eat it as much as if you name it a decent name.
Maybe,
and I'm not saying those were stupid names. I shouldn't have said Tim's name. But there's something about, like, when you say skeleton soup, you just sit down and you picture a spinal cord and you're like, ugh.
No, thanks. I'm on a diet.
Oh, Tim Kennedy always sells the bao at the bake sale for the animal shelter, the steamed Chinese pork buns. But this year he has to be up in the push for something.
Oh.
So we have never not, if he'll allow me a double negative, never not had him. And so we were trying to figure out who could sling the bao because we have so many this year, hundreds of them. We've made hundreds. And so we found this guy who his head is whole shaved, is all shaved. So he kind of looks like a bao. And we're hoping that like suggestive selling will work. So we're going to put him on it.
All right. Don't the bao just sell themselves?
Yeah, but you know what? We normally make about 350, 400, but we've got at least 650 in the freezer. So,
but how many have you pre-sold?
About 150, 200. So, and not pre-sold, I don't know, but we've delivered about 150 so far where we just, say, here, take them now.
Yeah, really, really. Wow.
We need the freezer space.
Oh, my gosh. It's big.
Mm-hmm.
Well, after Saturday, you're going to have, like, I know that, you know, the sales on the 9th and on the 10th, you start working on next year probably. But no. But still, what have you been eating for dinner?
See, now that's cruel because you know that I have just been throwing dry boxes of macaroni and cheese at Dale and saying, here, not on this. Okay, that's an exaggeration, but I am looking forward to cooking again.
Yeah.
Because I roll my dough out on my stove, and not just the cookie dough, the pie crust, everything gets rolled out on that cooktop. I'm not cooking because I don't want it hot for an hour.
Right.
And I am looking forward to cooking again. I am excited about making, you know, stews and soups and winter things. I'm really, really excited about that. It's sort of like that dangly gift in the future, you know, that reward for getting done is 20 pounds of onions. I'm going to caramelize them and I'm going to make a bunch of French onion soup. And that's just so wintery,
man.
You know.
I think that we're going to do that in soup class.
It's so good.
Yeah. And if you're talking about using seasonal ingredients, you know, you can always get your hands on onions.
Mm-hmm.
And they're so good when you caramelize them. It doesn't even matter if they don't start out sweet. They end up sweet.
Mm-hmm. And I do that. I put I do a bunch, at least 10 pounds at a time. And then I put them in quart bags, the ones I'm not using for the soup that I'm making right then. And then they are all caramelized. So I can make that soup so fast for the rest of the year.
Very nice.
It works really well.
Very nice. Ooh. So I want to remind everybody of two things. The first thing is that you're listening to Food Talk on Coast Community Radio, KMUN Astoria, KTCB in Tillamook. And welcome if you're just joining us. And thank you if you're sticking with us. And the other thing I want to remind you about is that at North Coast Food Web, we are doing, and there are probably other things on the calendar, so I encourage you to go to northcoastfoodweb.org and check the calendar. But I happen to know about the soup and stew series because I'm teaching it. So January, we're doing a 3-week soup and stew class. And I'm excited about it because it's the time of year when we need that stuff.
See, I think these classes are such a great thing because sometimes you just need a kickstart, you know, on your way to cooking. I think it's just such a great thing.
Yeah. Cooking together. There's nothing mm-hmm. like it. If that's not something that you regularly have a chance to do, I totally encourage you to find a neighbor or a friend and just do something in the kitchen together. It makes you feel totally differently mm-hmm. about cooking and food and all of the benefits that mm-hmm. we get from it. So, yeah. I could go on and on about that forever because I think it's kind of, I have a religious zeal about cooking
but I've been
together.
I've been thinking about what it takes to be a good cook. Not a good cook, what it takes to like cooking. And I think there's a couple things. One, just getting started is hard. You don't know where to start. And I think classes are a great way because then what you make is going to be good. It'll be successful. You'll be successful. And that's a big thing. And then... my brain just fell out. I hate that. I just vapor locked like an old Buick. My God, I can't wait for this sale to be over.
You know, there's no cure for that vapor lock. You just have to pull over and wait.
Yes.
So
yes.
Just look for a turnout and wait. I think that the act of cooking together, I have seen this so many times in classes. People come in reluctant or they're just curious or whatever it is, and by the end of a few hours of cooking something together and mm-hmm. sitting down together and eating it together and then taking some home
mm-hmm.
is it's sort of a little revolutionary moment right then where mm-hmm. first of all you've made a new friend maybe that you didn't know before because mm-hmm. you've you know stood next to each other at the workstations and cooked, but also it leaves you with this residual enthusiasm mm-hmm. to go home and do something. So
and it's fun, just a communal act. Like it's fun having people in the house for the bake sale, baking together. It's just fun baking together. I was thinking, my friend Kate, she wanted to make a devil's food cake, and she saw a recipe on the New York Times in their little insert or whatever, and it said that the cake was what was it, shockingly tender or something like that. And she's like, I want to make this cake. And I looked at it and I looked at the picture and it looked dry. And then I really think that shockingly tender could be like a euphemism for dry. And nowhere in the description did it say moist, you know?
Oh.
And so I'm like, I don't think that this is a good recipe. And I don't have a good recipe for devil's food cake because I've just never found one. I mean, there's acceptable ones, but I don't have one that I love. And I started thinking that sort of part of cooking, you know, it's not like you're just going to cook. You have to think, I really like beef stew. I have to find a recipe that I love for beef stew. And that's part of it is making that conscious decision of now I really want a really good chicken noodle soup, one that I love. Now, I love tarragon and I love carrots. So I'm going to make it with a lot of carrots and tarragon. And then you just start looking for recipes and you start trying them until you find one you love. And so it's work, but not bad work. But you go through that process of trying different recipes until you have one that you love, and you kind of have to decide that you're going to look for that thing you love. Does that make sense at all?
Yeah, it totally makes sense. And I think also very often for me, I end up taking pieces from different mm-hmm. recipes and making my own recipe because I loved this thing about that mm-hmm. and I loved this thing about that. Yes, it is work, but in reality, if you're going to feed yourself and your family, you're going to cook anyway.
And then you've got that recipe for your whole life, you know, and that's part of becoming a good cook is deciding that you're going to find the recipes that you love, figure out how to make the things that you love, make them the way that you love, and work on that until you get each one. And I always have them in the back of my head. I don't have to right now work on devil's food cake, but I'm working on clams, and because my husband loves clams, and we have them here.
Yay!
Yeah, you know, and so trying to learn how to make clams, and I don't eat them, so it's a challenge to learn how to cook something that you don't eat. So that's why I haven't done it up until this point in my life. But to me, that's more important than devil's food cake. But if I see something about devil's food cake, I'm going to file that away because I don't have that recipe yet.
I don't either. And I guess I've never eaten a really, truly superior devil's food cake.
Okay. I think I have in St. Paul, there's a place called Cafe Latte, and they have just a really dense, moist, dark chocolate. It's good. And I want to be able to make something like that.
Yeah. I don't know. I live in a house with two people. I don't need to be making a cake.
Oh, you
know
but
what
those
I mean?
Dogs are starving. I've seen them.
Those dogs are starving. Their little coats hardly fit anymore. They are not getting cake.
That is so funny. They're so cute. And I know chocolate, you can't give that to dogs. I was just...
Hey, you, speaking of dog treats, there's dog treats at the bake sale, right?
Oh, yes. Okay, so this year they're the delicious peanut butter / old fry oil flavored.
Ooh. You can run your biodiesel car and have dog snacks.
Oh, we got a bunch of rendered beef fat from Street 14, too. They had some side of beef, and they did that. And so they have also the rendered beef fat peanut butter flavored.
Right.
But dogs love them. You know,
oh,
they
yeah.
love that.
They do. They're unlike your average dog biscuit. And you were telling me, how many have you made?
No, I made the dough. And then the lovely Sarah Savage baked them. So about 150 dozen. So because if I bake the delicious old fry oil / peanut butter flavored biscuits in my oven, then the next like 36 dozen cookies that come out of there are also that flavored. And that is not universally appreciated by the non-canine world. And so she, thank Lord, does it. So anyway, that's right. Very, very nice of her. Every year she does it.
Well, yeah. And it's the animal shelter bake sale. You got to have, I think there are photos with Santa, right? With your pet with
yes,
Santa. So there's always that too.
Yes.
There's always that. Do you have an, what's going to be your first meal when you finally get your stove back?
You know, I might make a turkey. Remember how we were talking last week about how we only make turkey for Thanksgiving? I haven't, because we've gone out to eat probably the last 3 years for Thanksgiving. I haven't made a turkey in at least 2 years, and I think I might make a turkey.
I just was talking to somebody the other day who said, I'm going to make a turkey just for...
A turkey.
Yeah.
I really think it would be good. And I have a new oven, so I have, you know, I've always had two ovens, but one was made when Lincoln was still alive. And so now I have one that was made when you could drive Lincolns. So they're both convection ovens. So yeah, I have two ovens and I could just do the whole thing really easily and not have to worry about one of them catching on fire.
Yeah. I'm kind of excited. I think that's why I felt so lucky that I got to take a turkey carcass home.
Yeah.
And all the pan drippings, because that's the part you miss when you aren't the one who baked the turkey.
Yeah,
we need to do more of that. You know, something I never, ever make, ever.
Hmm.
I don't think I've ever made a ham. I've never roasted a ham.
Really?
Never.
Okay.
And I know that that is a holiday feast item for a lot of families, and I enjoy eating it when I go to somebody else's house, but I have never done it.
So Bonnie Fisher made a ham once that was so delicious. So somehow she got it to be like when you slowly cook a pork butt, and then like you can make pulled pork sandwiches out of it.
Yeah, because it melts all of the...
And I know she put it in an oven, and I know that she put water in the bottom of the pan. That's all that she told me. But it was so good, and I would like to try to do that, to not have it like where it's just kind of warmed up and sliceable, but to try to cook all that connective tissue so it would fall apart. And that was really, really delicious. And I think that you could make really interesting sandwiches.
Yeah.
If you got a
croquettes.
Ham. Oh, darling. Oh, that's so funny. When we first moved here, okay, you know, right away, bam, we got married. Bam, our house got destroyed. So we lived on this farm. And it was, interestingly enough, Bonnie Fisher's family, the matriarch of their family had just died. So we lived in her house. And so that was the social center for that whole family. Two brothers married two sisters. Interesting family. Yeah. So their whole social center. We didn't want to take their house up. So we every Sunday morning I would make sticky buns and everybody would come over so they could still have access to the house. And then they would always, when they were farming, stop there for lunch. And so one day I made croque madames, you know, croque monsieur. So it's essentially a ham and cheese, grilled cheese sandwich, but then you put a fried egg on top.
Oh my gosh.
And I heard like 2 days later in town that I'd tried to kill Ed Fisher. It was just too different. I thought that was so cute. I hear you tried to kill Ed again with something like curry chicken salad. You know, that was like so different. And that was, I thought, really, really cute. I remember that.
Oh my gosh. When we were talking about ham, it made me think of something. And see, I did the same thing that you
did. Well, you said
did.
You never made one. Are you thinking of making one?
No, I was just thinking about when we were talking about finding things you love and learning the way that you like it best made. And that's something that I've never done the research on ever.
Yeah.
Oh, I know what I wanted to say. Winter squash.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm big on it right now because they're everywhere and there's so many kinds. It's like apples and squash right now.
I know. I got a Hubbard squash at home and I got to cook that up too. I've never cooked one. I'm really interested. It's so beautiful. It's so orange, like the best pumpkins. I'm excited to cook that.
Oh, man. And I just read something the other day in doing a little research for my food column that the really hard rind squashes continue to get sweeter as they are stored.
Really?
And so, you know, we can buy a big variety of squashes and eat the thin-skinned ones like the butternuts and the delicatas.
Mm-hmm.
Sooner and let the hard-skinned ones...
I didn't know that.
I didn't either, but they continue to convert their starch to sugar over time if you put them in a cool, dark place and don't look at them.
It's like one of the only times I get to use my cleaver.
I'm always thinking at any given time more with hard-shelled squash than any other thing that I could lose a digit or two.
See, for me, it's cutting up hard candy when I'm making those stained glass cookies. What do you call them? Those Jolly Ranchers, man. Those are scary to cut. Seriously. So this year we're using Lifesavers. They last longer in the cookie before they get kind of, you know, mushy or sticky. And they are so much easier to cut. So do you know the German word for cleaver is Hackmesser? Isn't that awesome? And so, like, when we were talking there, I had to, like, think ahead. What is the English word for cleaver? Because I love that word hack messer so much.
That is a daunting word. Now I'm even more scared. I have the world's worst cleaver. I might as well just take a hammer to the squash. Seriously. Yes, yes. It's like, I don't even know how you sharpen the cleaver. It's a mess. Yeah. Hey, you know, it's like 30 seconds before 10 o'clock. Linda, ooh, have we cooked a darn thing this morning? Yeah, sort of.
Yeah.
We have. All right, so we're going to see everybody at the Animal Shelter Bake Sale at the Lovell Showroom on 14th and Duane in downtown Astoria on Saturday morning from 9 o'clock. Doors open at 9. Be there for the Doorbuster sales.
Doorbuster.
It goes until 4. And you're welcome to bring your favorite pet for a photo with Santa.
People always bring ferrets and snakes. It's so funny.
It's so wonderful. Thank you, Linda Perkins.
So nice to see you, Marianne.